Welcome to the UK MSCN podcast, show 17. In this podcast, I get a chance to talk to Hadi Hariri about BDD. It was recorded on the 10th of December. The links to the show can be found at bit.ly/MSDN podcast. Hope you enjoy the show. Hello there, Hadi. How are you?
Hi, Eric. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well, thank you. And I wonder if you could just say a few words about yourself and where you work.
I'm currently working for a software company or a software consultancy company that's based in Southampton. It's called iMeta Technologies. And we deal with bespoke software and we do training and stuff like that. But luckily, I'm based out in Spain with a CTO. So we get the sunshine, they get the rain. Well, sorry, when I say they, you get the rain as well, I guess.
No, we purely get sunshine over here. The rumours of 80 days of constant rain are complete lies. So your CTO is Steve Strong, isn't it?
Yeah. He's the guy that's doing the LinkedIn Hibernate stuff.
Yes, indeed. And you wrote an article on behaviour-driven development for me as opposed to test-driven development.
Yes.
You sent me the article after we'd had a go at explaining it to each other at TechEd, because I must admit I was struggling to understand the difference between BDD and TDD. And you did a great job at TechEd, because of course we did it in front of a computer screen, which made it much easier. A bit of credibility though. How long have you been working with TDD and BDD?
Oh, well, with TDD I've been at least, I would say, around 4 years. At least, yeah.
Okay, and then BDD more recently?
BDD more recently, yeah. BDD I've been looking at it for about, I started looking at it a little bit over a year ago. And then kind of because of my job and what I had to do in that moment, I wasn't actually starting any new projects. So I was, I left it a little bit. And then around 8-9 months ago, I started picking it up again and started to work with it. And it's a continuous learning experience for me, just like everything else is. But I'm finding that I feel really comfortable with it, because it's one of the things that was lacking for me with the TDD. I'm finding that this BDD fills the void, so to speak. So it hasn't been that long in terms of BDD. But TDD I've been doing for quite a while.
It would be good to know the kind of projects you're using BDD on, but it would also be good to kind of just give a little explanation to the listeners of TDD before we start building on it. So do you want to start with the project? So what kind of projects are you actually using this on?
Mostly the work I do right now is web development. I'm doing with ASP.NET MVC, I use in Hibernate and things like that. So most of my projects are right now web development, but I don't think that has too much of a impact, the type of project you're doing, to the whether you're doing TDD or BDD.
Okay, so it should be useful to many different project types out there.
Yeah, I think absolutely everything. I mean, any type of project you do, and we'll get into this a little bit later after we cover TDD a little bit, but I don't think that there's some people that try and say, well, no, this is only suited for this type of project and that is only suited for that type of project. And I kind of find that it's not really the case. I think if you push yourself hard enough, you kind of see it, things click and you say, well, actually it does work, you know, for every kind of scenario.
Okay. Sounds good.
But if you want, I'll just, you know, we'll just catch up on TDD.
You know, I'm in my travels and I'm looking at teams in the UK doing work. The use of TDD is still relatively small. I'm guessing it's still sub 10%. I'm sure I've done a poll on this a few months back and it is quite small. So there's a lot of folks that would need to kind of get some, you know, first principles of TDD in their head.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because, I mean, I've seen a lot of sessions and stuff on TDD. And I think one of the biggest mistakes or misconceptions of TDD is when people say test-driven development is about writing tests first. And I think that already puts people on the wrong path of to understanding the true idea behind TDD. You know that in terms of unit, when we're talking tests here, we're always referring to unit tests. So normally the idea behind a unit test is that you have a piece of code and you want to test that in an automated way, not to make sure that it works, but to actually have it mostly as a regression test. So as you start changing things, you can always run these tests and make sure that something you've changed hasn't broken something that you wrote before. So the test-driven development approach is you write a test first, and then you write the code. And when someone says that to you, you kind of say, well, how am I going to write a test for something that I don't have? It seems silly. How am I going to test drive a car that I haven't built yet? It's the same idea. How am I going to test some software that I haven't built? And that's the key mistake there, because you're not actually writing a test there. What you're doing is you're trying to use something. It's a user interface. It's a mock-up of a user interface. You know, I always compare it when I talk about test-driven development. I always compare it to when you're sitting with a customer and you're trying to design a user interface. A lot of times you take a piece of paper, or recently, you know, with the sketch flow from Blend, you can do a quick mock-up of what the user interface will look like. You don't go and write the application completely and show it to the customer. You do a normal mock-up first so the customer has a feel for what it is. Why do you do that? Because it's the user interface for the customer. It's how he's going to use the application. So I always look at test-driven development in the same way, from a lower level as a developer, how I'm going to consume my classes. How am I going to interact with my API? So if I could write on a whiteboard, you know, I could say, well, I want to consume a class. How would I call the class? How would I call a method on that class? What parameters would I pass into that class? I could design that, sketch that out on a whiteboard. And then once I have a general idea, I could then go and code it. The problem is that the whiteboard, well, everything you write out on there, you lose afterwards when you wipe it out. So how would I be able to actually verify that that works? That's where the testing part comes in, where we can use unit tests to kind of consume the class, define how we want to call the methods, define how we're going to call the class, define how we're going to pass in the parameters. And once we've defined that, then go ahead and create the class.
Okay, so one of the things people have tried to do is they've tried to kind of rename test-driven development to test-driven design to be a little bit more explicit about the thing you're trying to achieve. Do you find that helpful when you're trying to explain TDD to someone?
I think the issue there, yeah, it does help to add design in there. But I think the issue there is the actual word test.
Yes.
Because you're not testing. I mean, you're not writing a unit test to say, I want to test my code and have a unit test. What you're doing, you're designing your code. So the best way to we've done unit tests back 20 years ago. Everybody had done a web form or a, you know, WinForm application where they dropped a button on the form, double clicked it, and then the event handler wrote some code that would call some method to make sure that that method works. That was a unit test. The problem was that you didn't have regression. You know, you wrote that method once and you never ran it again. So, you know, you never had some way to automate this. So we've all done unit tests in some way or another. And that is the smallest way for us to test functionality, right? So if you combine that concept of how is the most the easiest way with the least effort for me to test that something that I've designed actually works, that's a unit test. So you play with that and you actually start to carve out the design of your class. And as you carve out the design, what you're doing, you're trying to consume that class. You're trying to call the method. And that's when you start to see, well, actually, the way I've designed this method doesn't work because I need to pass in an extra parameter. Or, in fact, I need to pass this parameter into the constructor because I'm going to use this parameter in multiple calls. So it's a harness for you to try and test out your design with the added value that after you've finished it and you implement it, you will have a unit test that can serve as a regression test. So if your initial design doesn't work, you can always go back and change it.
Yeah, I remember a couple of years ago being at Dev Week in the UK, and it was a chap from ThoughtWorks whose name escapes me, but I might add it in the edit. a chap from ThoughtWorks, and he took us through a test-driven development of a very simple algorithm. And to me, it was one of those light switching on moments, because the algorithm that he arrived at by following TDD was so much more robust and so much more elegant than if I'd start from where I would normally have started to design that algorithm. For me, was a big switch on to, yep, TDD, that's an important aspect, or that approach. So let's fast forward a little bit. Well, actually, no, it's not actually that recent, but BDD. Dan North, he came up with the term behavior-driven development.
Yes, that's correct.
And that was quite a while ago, though.
Yeah.
Because I remember seeing it sort of out the corner of my eye and paying no attention to it. But I remember that was a while back I saw that. What was Dan trying to solve then?
Well, Dan was trying to, according to, you know, and I've never had the pleasure to meet Dan personally, but according to his writings, one of his issues was what we were just talking about now, is that when you try and explain TDD to people, immediately they've got this preconception in their head of a unit test, and I have to write a test before I write a code. So he was potentially trying to get rid of this notion, this concept of a test. And also, this all happened. So one of the ways he approached this was that he took existing TDD concepts and frameworks and started to strip out everything to do with the word testing. So instead of, like, for example, a test, he would call it something else, a fact or whatever. Instead of putting assertions, he would, you know, change the word assertions to maybe something else. These were the ideas behind it, to try and get rid of everything in a framework that would kind of relate to the word test, and more towards what TDD is really about, which is design. So since there weren't many frameworks around, that's when he wrote his own. He wrote the JBehave, which was the unit testing framework in Java, which currently still exists. And at the same time, there was a lot going on in terms of domain-driven design and the concept of a ubiquitous language, where, you know, the customer speaks in the same way that the developer writes the code, a mutual understanding, they use the same concepts, they use the same terms. So that's when he kind of blended this in also and tried to create some sort of structure, whereas the business or the customer could express himself in a way where the developer could understand more clearly, and vice versa, which is one of the biggest problems and one of the greatest advantages to BDD, and one of the sort of distinctions, I would say, between BDD and TDD. So, you know, he was trying to solve an initial problem of getting rid of the testing things so that people could actually understand what test-driven development is about. But it just happened that this was going on at the same time as DDD, and the concept of having one uniform language for developer and customers to speak. Okay, so, you know, this whole concept of a ubiquitous language, I hope I'm saying that word right, because it's kind of...
It's as right as I ever say it. So.
Okay. The idea is, I mean, one of the problems with software development is that, you know, the customer doesn't... You always get the same scenario. Oh, the customer didn't express himself properly, the developer saying, right? Or the developer saying, oh, no, well, he changed his requirements. Or the customer saying, no, I said one thing and the developer understood something different. And that's kind of like the gap that DDD tried to solve by expressing concepts and how you program the concepts in terms of the business, in terms of the language, the domain you're trying to solve. So you bring the domain concepts and make them part of the actual program that you're trying to create. Okay. And that's where BDD also hooked onto this idea. And if you start to think about it, you know, every time I talk about test-driven development or when I write unit tests, the normal way that you would write unit tests is, you know, the typical thing you would see is, like, especially if you're talking about calculators, like test add, or test delete, or test subtract, or test authenticate valid. Now, that is the name of a test. And it tells you that you're validating some kind of authentication. However, there's a couple of problems there. It doesn't tell you what scenario you're trying to validate against. It doesn't say to you, you know, are you testing an authentication when the username and the password is valid or whether it's invalid, etc. There's also the word test. A lot of times I find code bases, you know, the tests that people have written with the word test prefixed. There's no need for that. It's clearly understandable that we're in a testing assembly under a unit testing framework and that this is a test. You know, it's no reason to add the test word in there.
These are the same people who name every stored procedure SP underscore.
Exactly. You know, there's tooling already that can tell us that this is a stored procedure. You know, but you know, so I've always tried to express my tests in a more fluid way. I mean, I've never, you know, initially I also started out the same way. You know, test add, test subtract, test authenticate, etc. But now I try and write my tests out as a sort of specification of what they're doing. So, for example, I would say, when provided valid credentials, authentication should return a valid user. This because this not only serves for me to understand what the test is doing, but also when someone else looks at the code, they can make sure that what the test code is actually doing corresponds to what the method is saying. Because just because a test goes green doesn't necessarily mean that it's valid. It just means that the code you're running is correct. But if we're looking at tests as a way to design things, as a way to interpret the customer's requirements, then we should, you know, have substantial proof that what we've understood is actually what the customer needs. So I always look at tests as a functional requirement of the system. It's a specification. For me, it's a live specification. It's that document in Word that you write that as soon as you write it is obsolete, because as soon as the customer changes his mind, you never go back and update that Word document, do you? It's just written and gone, forgotten about. Whereas if you do that, if you take that concept of writing a functional specification inside your unit tests as the method names, etc., you have a live specification, because as the customer updates his requirements, you change the code and you change your method names to reflect what the code is doing. And you always have a live specification. And that's kind of the gap that Dan North tried to fill as well by providing this sort of schema of doing things with the given when then, which is given a set of preconditions or context or scenarios. When something happens, then something else should happen. So if you look at this, what we're actually doing is we're expressing in a way user stories. We're expressing the customer's requirements in the form of a test.
Perfect. So one of the things that is clear from your article is you could produce all this stuff manually, and you could just work through and label things differently, or you could use some kind of framework or tooling to help. And you mentioned a few in your article. Can you say a bit about each of those?
Yeah. So, you know, this, if we're latching onto the concept of just following this kind of schema of given, when, then, or, you know, interpreting user stories, trying to express requirement specifications in code, it kind of becomes hard to do this with more traditional or existing frameworks. I mean, if I take, you know, NUnit or MS Test or things like that, what do I have there as primitive constructs? I have the method name, and then I have a bunch of assertions. So where would I, you know, basically the only thing I have there to play with is the method name, because I can't rename assertions. I can't, you know, I could create extension methods or things like that, but all I have is an assert r equal, assert r true, etc. So the only thing I really have to play there with is the method name. And of course, if you start to write really long method names with describing the scenarios, describing the actions that occur and what should happen, then it starts to become complex to work with. And that's some of the things that the frameworks that have been written in terms of for BDD try to solve. Now, the original one from Dan North was called JBehave. Then in Ruby, there is one called RSpec, Another one recently coming out has come out called Cucumber. They come up with the strangest names. And then there's a port of, not port, I mean, the core ideas of RSpec has been ported over to .NET, which is to a framework called MSpec, M for Mary. So MSpec allows you to work with, write your tests using, you know, the ideas behind behavior-driven development, and it makes it very easy for you to maintain this in a way that can, that correspond to stories, that correspond to, you know, functional requirements. And basically the idea behind it is that, you know, you have these contexts or scenarios where you describe a certain use case, a certain example of the application you're trying to develop. And then with the combination of that and some Lambda magic, et cetera, it kind of allows you to make a nice flow of how you write things. So, for example, you would, and this is, you know, referenced in my blog in the screenshot we had, in my screenshot we had when user logs in with valid credentials, that would be the class name. And then there's an interface defined in MSpec called establish. And then you would write establish context. As the interface, the variable would be context, and then with some Lambda parentheses, you would define, you know, you would establish that scenario, and then there's another interface called because, and then inside the because you would establish another scenario, and then there's another interface called it, and inside the it is where your assertions would go. And the beauty is that MSpec actually allows, it has an option to export this information, the test results, because what it does, when I've written my class name, I write when underscore user underscore logs, blah, blah, blah. What MSpec does, when it runs this, it will remove the underscores and write this for you in a nicely formatted sentence. And you can actually export that information to HTML, apply some CSS, and you can hand over a specification of the application to your customer without you having to touch anything, you know? So your customer can actually read his user stories. And much the same way, the customer can write user stories, hand them to you, and then you just convert them into classes. And you got a two-way, you know, live functional specification. And this is a very important point I have to make. And if you look at the test also, I have multiple its, right? Now, one of the key rules of unit testing is that in principle, you should only have one assert in a test. You should only test one thing. In BDD, there's the concept of let's not focus so much on the individual units of work, but more in a sense of an example, a scenario that we're trying to solve. So what that translates into is that, you know, in my test, in the code that I write, when I say, for example, here, when user logs in with valid credentials, what I'm doing as a business, as a customer, I want to express what exactly I want to happen. So I say, when I put in valid credentials, I want you to go to the home page and I want you to display the main menu to me. So you can clearly specify that in a use case and you can clearly translate that into a test. You don't have to now start to think into individual pieces of code where you can only test one thing at a time, which is more of a TDD approach.
Yeah, no, that makes complete sense as well.
Because that allows you to have this, you know, ubiquitous language with the customer. Now, the key thing here is that this is another thing that a lot of people try to say, well, BDD isn't suited for all scenarios. Because the test that I show you in the code, that works great when you're at the top level. You say to the customer, right, express what you want me to do. And the customer says, when you do this, I want this to happen and this to happen. You say, great. So I write this test. I write the, you know, the it sections. I write the assertions, etc. Great. What happens now when I start to talk to, for example, to my service layer? What happens when I start to talk to my data access layer? Do I drop BDD there? Do I go back to TDD or can I still work with BDD? Now, a lot of people say, no, you can't really, you know, BDD doesn't suit there. You have to go back to TDD. And I say, why? It works exactly the same way, except my context, my scenario changes. You know, instead of talking in a language where business users understand each other, where customers understand each other, I talk in terms in the language that I understand, as developers understand.
It's very like, because I think a bunch of people might have come across UML, it's very much like the role of an actor in UML, whether it's a real human being or whether it's just a system. If you think of these things as, you know, systems talking to systems, you can very easily see how behavior-driven development still fits.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's just, we're talking, it's the same idea, we're defining the behavior of the system, but at a different level. You know, I shouldn't be talking about throwing a not null exception to a customer. You would know it goes to a customer and say, you know what, if you log in invalidly, I'm going to throw a not null exception at you. They're going to say, what?
Would you ever do TDD then? I assume you would do it if, you know, the rest of the team were TDD and weren't BDD and you joined it. But if you were starting out on some new work, would you ever go down a more traditional TDD route, or would you move straight to BDD now?
Straight to BDD. Because one of the issues that I lacked, and the gap that I was telling you that I was missing in TDD, was this whole, I always try to, you know, describe things as a more complete system, not as individual interactions. And I always was fighting with that when I was doing TDD. And here, for me, it just fits right in. You know, the way I express my test names, the way I express what actions I want to happen, to occur, etc. For me, it just feels more natural. So, you know, and especially I love MSpec. I mean, the framework itself is really nice. It's really nicely made. And I really don't see any reason.
Is MSpec very stable? Is it changing a lot?
I have not had problems with it since I started using it. And I actually combine it with... because you can also, you know, it's got its own console runner, and then you can also combine it with, if you have ReSharper, one of the guys and that works on the MSpec or contributes to the MSpec team wrote a plugin for ReSharper, so you can actually combine it with the ReSharper runner, and it's got the output to HTML, you know, by default. So I've never had issues with it. Nope, never.
Excellent.
And there hasn't been that many releases. I mean, you know, it just went, I don't know if it went beta or 0.2 or 0.3 right now.
Okay.
There's not been that many releases.
But it's very stable.
The only thing I would say, that the only issue that MSpec had up to now, and I'm hoping that this will change the adoption rate, is that MSpec uses Rake to build, to make its build. And it doesn't ship with binaries. So you had to go to GitHub, which, if you're not familiar with Git, it's not an issue because there's a zip, you know, there's a button where you could download all the source file as zip. You can download it, but then you had to install Ruby to run Rake to build the binary.
To build it, yeah.
Yeah. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with the project Horn.
I am.
Yeah. Well, Horn is a project that Paul Cohen started with the idea of trying to solve it. It's similar to the gems in Ruby. The idea is that if I want to build an open source library that has a dependency on another open source library, now I have to go and download both, download this, figure out the dependencies, build it. So he put together Horn. And the idea behind Horn is that you just issue a Horn get the name of the project you want, and it will go to the repository, download it, build the stuff on your machine, and give you the binaries. The issue with that, again, is that you need to build all this on your machine. So you need to have Ruby, Rake, Git, Subversion, all of these tools installed on your machine to use Horn. And that's when, talking to Paul, you know, one idea that came up is, let's do this server side. So now there's a server where all this code, all these actions happen on the server. And every day, there's a service that runs once a day, and it goes out and gets the trunk and the release versions of all the open source projects, builds them, figures out the dependencies, zips them up, and there's zips waiting for you on a website for you to go and download. The website is called horngets.net.
I'm just checking that out. I hadn't realized that had happened. So
yeah, that's actually there's a little logo of iMeta there because we're sponsoring the bandwidth, the machine, everything.
Oh, excellent.
So yeah, that, you know,
There you have the latest version of every open source library you want. Well, everyone that's got their own Horn descriptor is what's called. So including MSpec. So MSpec's got a Horn descriptor. So now you can actually get the binaries to MSpec directly from that website.
Indeed. And it's the only testing one in the testing category is MSpec. Yes.
There's also, I don't know if you're familiar with teamcity.codebetter.com.
I am familiar in that I've chatted with the Team City guys before, but I have not used it.
Okay, that's a continuous integration server, and they've got the similar projects running on codebetter.com for open source projects. The difference between Horn and that is that there it's more of a CI server, whereas here it actually figures out the dependencies across projects. So it's kind of like one guy said, it's like a continuous integration test across projects, because what happens sometimes is that some open source project goes and changes some API, yeah, which breaks another open source project. So.
And you get circular breaking and all sorts of stuff. I was on a little team doing some open source work a while back, and I must admit, I rarely dev these days, so I wasn't doing much dev. I was tasked with trying to get some bits to work together, and that was fascinating.
That's a nice way to put it.
Yes, yeah, it was pre-Horn, and it was like, oh, okay, this is just very challenging.
Yeah.
Okay, Hadi, thanks very much for that. We've probably taken enough time for this podcast on BDD. I'll make sure the show notes have the Horn stuff, the Team City stuff in there, plus obviously links to your blog where you find more information about BDD. Worth saying that we'll include the article in the ebook. So we have an ebook coming out for the best articles of 2009, and the BDD article you wrote is one of those. And people can download that ebook from, let me think, it'll be bit.ly/flashebook2, all one word. Okay, Harry, I hope you have a good day and speak to you again sometime soon. Thank you.
Thank you.